Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out.
I like this open. Love this open. Del Olalea out. Will Kunkel in. That jam fires me up. Gets me rolling. It's like the 2025 Jock Jam. That's Childish Gambino. Danny Glover.
Close.
Gosh, Donald Glover. Damn it. Every time I think Donald Driver.
Yeah. Yeah, Donald Driver. Great receiver back in the day.
Yeah.
Look him up, kids.
Yeah, look him up, kids. Play for the Packers. Stud. Super nice guy. Find me on social media. Will Kunkel filling in for Dell today on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 here in Houston. We're live on Kicking It with Kunkel as well. Getting your questions in. But I want to go to the phone lines. Chuck there. We're going to get into the Texans in this matchup with the Chiefs in a minute, my keys to the game, but Chuck wants to talk about college football, and I went off on college football committee earlier this morning. We launched the show. Chuck, what are your thoughts, man? You just calling in to tell me how right I am?
Dude, I agree with you. I'm a Notre Dame fan, and I understand why everybody's wringing their hands, but we win every year over this crap. Just make it 32 teams in. Go to 96 teams.
Hell
10 games. Then we all get in and play in the tournament. The bottom line is Notre Dame lost 2 games by 4 points. One on the road, one at home. Against the 12th ranked team. And at the time, A&M was in the whatever. They're 7 now. Hey, it is what it is. It's going to be there. It's always going to be about the Dome. It's always going to be about Alabama, Ohio State, and whoever's the hot team at the time. But those three teams are always going to get the benefit of the doubt. Remember, they kept Nick Saban out a couple years ago when he was 5th, and yet his Alabama team would have been they would have been favored over every team in the college football playoffs if it was there by Vegas. So this either go to all computers, go to Vegas, go anywhere else. But we got to stop the playing. Every time, come on.
First of all, are you hitchhiking right now? Are you on the side of the road?
No, I dropped.
Roll up. Do you have the window down?
I got it up now. Sorry.
Did you not know you were on the radio? Did this catch you by surprise, Chuck?
Oh, no. I just was waiting a bitch, and I had to smoke a cigarette. So, yeah, hey. Whatever.
Oh, hell yeah. Rip that heart dart, Chuck. Hell yeah, brother. Marlboro Red?
No, man, no.
You're a slim guy.
Just some kind of red. No, I'm a fat guy.
Chuck, I appreciate the phone call. Listen, I have no problem if Notre Dame's in. I don't give a damn if they're the one seed or not. Here's what I ask for is consistency from the committee of telling us who's in, who's out, and why they are in or out, knowing what the criteria is. That's my biggest problem. And you're right. Like, it's always going to come down to these teams that get the benefit of the doubt because of who they are, what their brand is. It's Alabama. It's Notre Dame. Like, they have more leeway. They have more leniency. Their leash is longer. And it shouldn't be. Like, Vanderbilt's leash shouldn't be so tight that they can't friggin' move and they're choking. They shouldn't be put in a choke collar because they're Vanderbilt. Texas shouldn't be in the conversation and have a debate because they're Texas. They're 9-3. They lost to Florida. End of story. Bottom of the line. BYU shouldn't have to overcome the fact that they're not Notre Dame, that they're not Ole Miss, that they're not in the SEC. Their resume's similar, if not the same, as Ole Miss's. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no criteria. There's no checklist. And that's my biggest problem, Chuck. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's kind of where I sit. Shout out to the Golden Domers. Get in, do your damn thing. And for the record, I love that they're independent because everyone else can pound sand. Why would they ever join a conference, split revenue, share revenue, if they're getting 100% of NBC money? Like, dude, be on your own. Do what's best for you. I love that for them.
I do appreciate Chuck acknowledging that it's like, yes, the Golden Dome. Like, and, you know, because I went to Texas. Like, I know that after they beat Texas A&M, the, like, immediate media blitz of this is why Texas deserves to be in the college football playoff at 9-3. Like, that wouldn't be happening if, like you said, they're Vanderbilt or if they're Northwestern. Like, that just wouldn't happen. It is the helmet that matters. That's why Notre Dame is getting basically an exception when you look at the rest of the ranking at being ranked above a team they lost to head-to-head when they have the same record. Texas is above Vanderbilt, and they have a worse record. So the inconsistency, the only consistency is brand bias. It's to me, it's even less conference bias. It's more of just...
Well, it's definitely not conference bias because Vanderbilt ain't catching any breaks.
It's the helmet. It is the brand that your team is, and just the, like, again, yeah, we just think this team's good. Like, for as much data that they'll throw, as much, like, what's in the, you know, consideration, the principles that they're – all it is just like, I don't know, man. I just think Notre Dame's good. That's all – I think Notre Dame's better than BYU. That is what the committee is saying. That is all.
And if the eye test is going to be part of it, I don't have a problem. But use that same eye for the other teams.
Exactly.
Like, that's the, like,
be consistent.
Where are we on this eye test? When does the eye test come into play? Is it a tiebreaker? Is it the foundation? Is it the peak of the pinnacle? Like, what part does the eye test play?
Are you looking at best wins? Are you looking at bad losses? Like, are you? Because it feels like sometimes they go, well, look at their wins. They have three top whatever wins. And then sometimes they go, well, that loss to SMU and Louisville for Miami, oh, that's so bad. Like, you know, and then for other teams, it's look at their wins. It's again.
I mean, exactly. Why is Miami ahead of Vanderbilt with losses to Louisville, SMU? Those have got to be two of the worst losses in the top 15. They have to be.
I mean, it's definitely the worst. I think Texas lost to Florida is the worst. Like, the actual.
But Miami beat Notre Dame, and they're behind them.
Yeah.
By a fair margin, 10 to 12. Like, two spots matters a lot in this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's two massive spots. That is.
Meanwhile,
being in
the... Vanderbilt, all they do is keep winning, and they sit at 14. Again, it feels like the committee is just holding their head underwater, saying, don't make a sound. Don't let America know that Vanderbilt is here.
Or it's just the teams that they're like, we think they should be in the playoff, and we just hope that they justify it on the field. That's what it is. It's just we hope that Notre Dame just justifies being in the playoff. We hope that we don't have to justify Vanderbilt being in the playoff. I think that's all it is.
I mean, they're going to have to – should every conference get an automatic bid? Like, should we have Virginia or Duke guaranteed in? Should we change the rules this year simply because the ACC is a terrible conference? You know, like, we've seen this before in the NFL, and I'm adamant against it in the NFL in particular because it's just kind of runs in cycles, and it happens very rarely where you have a team like the Patriots when they had Matt Castle come in for Tom Brady, and they did really well, but they didn't make the playoffs. And then you had, like, the Cardinals with eight wins or something like that make the playoffs a handful of years ago. It happens very rarely. But whenever it does, the conversation comes up on First Take. Like, should the NFL change the way they run the playoff? Like, no. If you win your division, you're in. Best records get in. This works itself out every single year. Like, those bad teams are going to probably have a first-year exit. But should college football have Memphis in? Like, you know, like, should that team be guaranteed to be in?
No, I mean, it's one of those things where in a perfect world, I'd like, hey, If you play football, you have a chance to make. You know, there's not going to be any,
I like the idea, generally speaking.
Yeah, but the Boise State, I think there should be like a cutoff. I think there should be like, if you're not a top 16 team, like, we can't put you in.
Well, last year we had like 9 teams that were good. Mm-hmm. This year I would say, well, so I got to scroll all the way down until I get to 16 because I think Vanderbilt deserves a chance. But they're behind Virginia because Virginia gets an automatic bid. Utah's at 13. Oklahoma's at 12. Vanderbilt's at 16. So I think there's genuine – I firmly believe there's about 12 teams that deserve a chance to fight.
Mm-hmm.
What those 12 teams are, you know, we can always go back and forth. Nobody's arguing at the top. It's very top-heavy.
Yeah.
With five, Alabama, Texas A&M, like Indiana, yeah. Ohio State. I think Georgia, of course, will move in there if they beat Alabama. I just don't – there's no way that the SEC champion does not get a bye.
Yeah.
Whoever that's going to be.
If Alabama wins, you think they go up to 4?
How do you tell them no? How do you tell the SEC champion?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. The teams they're jumping, like they have good record. You know, they're jumping a lot of 11-1 teams, but they don't have like awesome resumes.
But this
resumes.
Is where it comes down to. It's Alabama. It's SEC. You don't tell the best conference in the country that their champion gets punished because you're too good. Like the conference is too good. You can't be in it because of that. But again, the other side is, well, losses are losses. You play to win the game. Like, it doesn't really there's no criteria. That's the biggest problem that we keep going on. And it brings me to another kind of thought process I have with how long does it take us? You have biases built in. And it's certain teams, when they're in the top 25, it's really hard. If you're in the top 10, it's very hard to get knocked out because your biases are built in. So in the NFL, we have the same issues, but it's more with like debating and it's more with conversations and it's more with barbershop talk and what we think here on the radio and kind of just BS. And it's not real. It's not impacted in the playoffs. The playoff picture will be determined properly, fairly, and righteously. It will be done the right way. There's no argument of who gets in the playoffs and whether they deserve to be in the playoffs. Sometimes it'll be like, oh, that really sucks for that team to be in that division. And they got kind of screwed. Like, sure, so be it. Yeah. But they knew what the rules were. We all know what the rules were.
There's a formula.
Yeah, there's a formula. You got to appease the formula. But what we do have are debates like the Bears. They're the number one seed, but everyone's like, oh, are they? Do I believe in the Bears? Like, we'll have that debate. No one's saying they deserve to be the one seed. Like, that's an insane conversation to have. Yes, their record dictates it. Therefore, they are. They are in the NFL. They play the play schedule that they finished last year. That is known. We understand the Texans are playing a first play schedule. The Colts get an easier schedule. The Jaguars get an easier schedule. That's the way this works. We all know it ahead of time, and it's fair. But we have the conversations of, are the Bears for real? How long does it take you as a fan to buy into a team? We're still having conversations, debates on Brock Purdy. Is he the guy? Is he not the guy? Sure, he's been to a Super Bowl. How much, what, like, did was it because of him? Did he actually have anything to do with that, or was it a system? And now we're doing that with the Chiefs on the other side. It's the Chiefs. Yeah, I know they're 6-6. Yeah, I know they lost 3 of their last 4, but let's dive into that a little bit more. It's not all just 3 losses in 4 games. They're all one possession games against good teams, a lot on the road as well. And now they got to take on the Texans. Like, it takes us a long time to be convinced that a team is done like the Chiefs or their team is real like the Bears when the history with them is really good or really bad. And that is absolutely playing a role in the college football playoff committees. They're human beings. It's not a computer. Whether you're Texas or Alabama or Notre Dame or Oregon or Texas A&M in the SEC or Ohio State, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt. We saw this last year with the Hoosiers. It took them a while to really gain traction. It was like, but look at their schedule. Like, there's excuses built in all the time. And that's now what we're doing with the Chiefs, and we're doing that with the Bears. All right, I said we were going to talk about the Chiefs and Texans matchup, and we are. We're just not going to do it in this segment. We're going to take a break here on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, and then when we come back, I promise, we're going to break down this game, what the keys are for the Texans to get this win and what I describe as an absolute hornet's nest and a really bad situation for the Texans this week. Albeit, I love the matchup. Get involved with the show. Call or text 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel filling in for Dell. We'll be right back.
Notifications. Look.
It's the Del Olalea Show, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Del Olalea.
Nah, no Del, dog. Dude's not bathing again today. Will Kunkel filling in on Del's show. Shout out to Del for allowing me to do this and well-deserved days off or week off for him. And don't forget, Glenn Davis is going to be at East River 9 on Friday. He's going to be out there at East River 9, breaking down where each country's soccer team is headed this summer. The must-watch groups in which countries will be playing in Houston. Tune into The Draw this Friday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Draw is presented by D&M Leasing, home of the Easy Lease. Super interested to see what teams we get here, when that's going to happen, how that's all going to look, and listen to Glenn, because I self-admittedly don't know poo-poo about poo-poo when it comes to soccer. I just can't wait to watch Team USA. Give me some hope, win a match, then get absolutely lambasted at some point and get embarrassed. Klamis on the feed comes up with a really good point, and then I'm going to get into the Texans-Chiefs game. He says, one big difference between the BCS and now is that we are no longer arguing the second-best team and the third-best team. We are arguing 12 and 13, much better with playoff. Yes. Yes, we are, and it is much. It's much better for ratings. It's much better for drama. It's much better for viewership. More teams are involved. That's why so many teams in the professional, so many leagues professionally have expanded their playoffs, because you just keep more cities and fan bases engaged. But here's the difference. Right now, we're debating what the hell makes you the 13th, 12th, 10th, 9th, 8th ranked team. Like, we're arguing things we shouldn't argue. We're talking about things that make the sport actually look bad and inept and completely ignorant to how they run their sport. When it comes to the NFL, no one's sitting around with their buddies being like, how the hell are they the one seed? How in the hell are the Bears sitting one overall in the NFC? It makes no sense that the Texans are fighting for a wild card. It just doesn't make sense that the Chiefs aren't in the playoff picture. It's a joke. They have Patrick Mahomes. Like, those aren't debates aren't being had. It's all about the football game. It's all about the record and what they are. We know exactly why every single team is where they are in the standings in the playoff picture. There's no discrepancies as to why the Chiefs are 6-6 and why they're, quote, in the hunt on the graphic. There's no discrepancies as to why the Jaguars are in first place in the AFC South, because they won the games that they've won and they've earned it. What the conversation surrounds in the NFL is whether we believe or not, whether that team's going to win, how they're going to win, why they're going to win, what the keys are. The debate and the conversation goes immediately to the field, which is where it should be. It goes immediately to the product and the players on the field and whether they have enough to beat team X, Y, and Z. That's where the debate should be. The debate shouldn't be, man, the NFL is inept. They have no idea how to put together the playoff. No, they got it. We got it. We all know what the criteria is coming into the season. We've all agreed on it, and we think it's fair and it's right. In college, I don't think anyone thinks it's fair. No one thinks it's right. No one thinks it's decent. No one even knows what the criteria is. That's the difference, is that we're debating 12 and 13. Yeah, but we don't know why. Like, we don't know why they're 12 and 13. We don't know why they're 10, 11, 12. Why the hell is Vanderbilt 14th in the nation for a month straight, and all they've done is win? If you win games in the SEC, especially on the road in Tennessee last week, convincingly, you should move up one spot, not get passed. That's the difference. The conversation in the NFL automatically goes to the game itself. So let's do that. Chiefs and Texans on Sunday Night Football. I've mentioned it. I do not like this matchup in regards to a situation for the Texans. I don't like them going into a desperate Kansas City at Arrowhead on Sunday night at 25 degrees. Like, I just don't like that situation. On paper, I like the matchup. My worries are this. Steve Spagnuolo and his defense. What does he have dialed up for C.J. Stroud and this offensive line. They blitz the sixth most in the NFL. 30.6% of the time they blitz. That is sixth most in the NFL. The most blitzing team is Brian Flores and the Vikings at 48%. And then the Falcons, 36.7%. And then Dolphins behind them. So blitzing in and of itself does not make you a good defense. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a tough time stopping them. But at so 30% is aligned with the Chiefs, Broncos, Bears, and Buccaneers. Those are all kind of the that area. Texans are 15th in the NFL. They blitz 26.6% of the time. Ideally, you don't have to blitz a lot to get pressure. The best defenses probably don't blitz that much because they have a really good front four, and they're able to garner pressure without blitzes. Like the Chargers, 18.5%. They're probably getting to the quarterback at a pretty decent rate. We know that the Broncos get to the quarterback the best in the NFL, and they're 30.6%, like a far cry off, 18% less than the Vikings. So the Chiefs are the Chiefs, but I worry about the defensive scheme that Steve Spagnuolo is able to put together in this type of situation. I'm not saying that he's going to have success or won't have success. It's just something to keep an eye on. That's one of my keys, is to be able to handle the pressure and handle the situations that Steve Spagnuolo throws your way. Number two is the penalties. Both teams have committed the same exact amount of penalties this season. The Raiders, the Chiefs, and the Texans have all committed 86 penalties this year. That is 10th most in the NFL. The Texans in particular have to be better on the penalties. I think they got to be better on the penalties than the Chiefs do, because the offense doesn't have the ability, at least on the offensive side of the ball, the offense doesn't have the ability to overcome the way that Patrick Mahomes has proven over time that he can overcome. The Texans' penalties against the Colts were 9 penalties for 85 yards. This is just too many. And in particular, not only on the offensive side of the ball, but before the ball snapped, know how to line up. Know whether you're on the line of scrimmage. Know whether you're off the line of scrimmage and if you're supposed to be covering up somebody or not. Know what you're supposed to do. Then try not to false start. Then don't go downfield if you're a lineman and it's a pass. You know, it's the small things in life. The penalties are huge in this game. And then obviously the last one is one that is true, tried, and tested in the NFL and any level of football. Win the turnover battle. The Texans have had too many games, in fact, this season, where they have won the turnover battle and had a massive special teams play and lost against the Broncos and the Seahawks. They've blocked field goals in those games and won the turnover battle and lost. You cannot do that. Your offense has to be good enough, which they are trending that way right now, to no longer be the anchor that they were at least early on in the season. But can they string games together? You know, I say this a lot, is that any player in the NBA can drop 30 points in a game. Like, any player has the ability to drop 30 points. Like, your 12th man has the ability to drop 30 points in a basketball game. Your best players do it night in and night out at 22, 23 points a game. The best players are consistent. The best offenses, the Colts offense is really good now they're hurt with a quarterback with a broken leg. But they did it over a period of time to earn that number one rank. The Rams offense, the Bills offense, the Packers offense, they've done it over a period of time. Now in the NFL, what you really want to do is be playing your best football this period of year, and I think the Texans are playing their best football. I don't think they're playing necessarily great football. The defenses, the offense isn't playing great football, but they're trending in the right direction is my point. And can they do it another game in a row? They were not good against the Bills offensively. They had 36 net yards offensively against the Bills in the second half. They had 2 first downs. So this notion that, oh, hey, the job is to win. Yes, it is. And we're getting to that period of time where all you want to do is win. And you don't really give a damn how you do it. You survive in advance. There's no such thing as an ugly win. But what you do want to do is have the ability to win games multiple ways. Best teams can win if they can't run the ball, but they can then pass the ball. They can't pass, but they run. The offense has a day off. The defense picks them up. They get a big-time play on special teams to save them. Best teams have the ability to win basketball games. If they're not hitting the three because they can dribble drive, they can shoot, they can score on the inside, they can play good defense to rescue them. Like, the best teams in any sport have the ability to win games multiple ways. Right now, the Texans are starting to be able to win games a little bit more with their offense. They're scoring touchdowns. They scored 2 touchdowns against the Texans. Excuse me. I hit the cough button, then cleared my throat after I took my finger off the cough button.
You'd fit in with the morning show.
What an idiot. I'm going to fit in with those morons?
Hall Great. Of Famers. Hall of Famers.
In what, their own house?
No, Texas Radio Hall of Famers.
They are awesome.
You do it long enough, they put you in the hall.
I'm about to say it. It's a game of longevity for those guys. You know what I'm saying?
They accumulate it.
They're not Gale Sayers. They have really good short careers. They had average long careers. And you got to respect that.
Yeah. But like Brett Favre, they threw a lot of touchdowns.
A lot of interceptions.
A lot of interceptions. With all due respect.
With all due respect.
All this with all due respect.
With all due respect. Texans starting to score offensive touchdowns, and I think obviously that helps. Like, you're going to have to start scoring touchdowns because you're not winning this time of year, and especially in the playoffs with field goals. You can't solely rely on your defense. Your defense isn't going to be able to do it all. And that's why I hate the phrase, defense wins championships. No, it doesn't, dude. No, it doesn't. Good teams win championships. Good, really good elite defenses can take you really far, but your offense still has to be good enough. Whatever the good enough is percentage-wise to complete that pie chart along with the special teams, okay, whatever, 10%, 20, 30, 40, I don't really care what it is, but you got to have some sort of a full, complete team to win a championship. You might be able to win a wild card game at home in the right situation on a good matchup solely because of your defense, but you're not going to go into the next round and the round after that relying only on your defense. So I think in this game against the Chiefs, going into Arrowhead at night, 25 degrees, you're going to need your offense to produce, and not just field goals, not only Kyemi Fairbairn. And you can't have your special teams giving up plays. This is another one of those games where you cannot beat yourself. You can't have to overcome turnovers. You can't have to overcome a bad special teams play, big-time punt return by the Chiefs or kick return, like you almost had to do against the Bills at the end of the first half. You score, and then all of a sudden, all the air is taken out of NRG because you give up a big-time kick return. That kind of crap can't happen this time of year against good teams on the road. You got away with it against the Bills because you are historically good on the pass rush and getting 8 sacks. You can't live that way. You can't live by hitting 25 threes in a game. That's just no way to live in a basketball game. You got to be able to be more balanced. So in this game against the Chiefs, like, if you play the Titans, I know it's a bad example because they keep playing close games against these bad teams, but, you know, when they take on the Cardinals and Raiders, okay, whatever. Go out there, get the win. You can rely on your defense. That's okay. But you can't just rely on your defense when it comes to the Chiefs game or when it comes to maybe the Chargers and Colts in the final week. It's going to be a really fun chase down the stretch. So my keys to the game, you got to play 3 complementary phases of football, take care of the rock, handle what Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, throws at you, and play disciplined football. And this is all stuff that anybody can kind of come up with. I don't actually, you know, usually it's like run the ball well, you know, whatever. However you move the ball. I don't necessarily care. Ideally, you run the ball well because a good offense is also a good defense. You keep Patrick Mahomes and those guys off the field. You know, I get it. Obviously, you're not reinventing the wheel. But play disciplined football. 86 penalties on the year. Your offense is not good enough to overcome these penalties consistently, especially in this type of atmosphere. Chiefs are favored, by the way, 3.5 points, which means that a neutral field is a toss-up. So Vegas now starting to show the Texans some respect. We kind of, at one point, after the Jaguars game, I think it was, we were like, all right, are they ever going to be favored again if they're not at home? Like, when would the Texans be favored? But they're now starting to garner that respect, and they're starting to earn that respect, honestly. Like, they're playing much better football. So those are my keys to the game. Coming up next, we're going to dive into this game a little bit more. We'll talk about whatever you want. Ask me anything, any questions you got. Call in, text in. The phone number is 713-780-3776. Will Kunkel filling in for Dell on his show until noon. Then we'll get you out to Rich Eisen. We'll be right back.
The Del Olalea Show continues. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
Kiss?
Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys, dumbass. I'm so bad without the audio. Now I can hear it. I'm so bad without the lyrics.
Yeah, so bad. I do the instrumentals just because we play talking over it and then we'll talk over it.
No, so, I understand why, and you're doing it right. I'm just bad at it.
It's the hole in your game.
It is. And you know what's bad? What's crazy is I can pick up a song real quick and exactly who it is at times.
Like on the radio or
whatever. Yeah. But without the lyrics, I'm... That's not No Sleep Till Brooklyn, is it?
It is.
I knew it. I said it so confidently, too.
Yeah. Golly. You formed it as a question you're so confident.
What a beta male. So weak. That's so bad. You know how we should just decide the college football playoffs?
And guessing Beastie Boys songs?
Yes. I genuinely think this is actually a good idea.
You'd get very similar results.
No, here's my idea, Sean. You ready?
Yeah.
I honestly think this is a good idea. Blind resume, all of them. Blind resume, every team in America, and rate them based, on their resume, what they've accomplished?
Yeah, just give the committee, like, Team A, Team B's.
Yeah. We do it every year in basketball.
Yeah,
where like they put the graphic up and you tell me who's team A, B, and
based
C.
Based on the RPI or something.
Yeah, your RPI, your strength of schedule. What is it, FPI now?
For football, it's FPI. Oh, the net rating.
I
think that kind of took
the over. KenPom.
KenPom.
Yep.
Basketball, I feel like, has it. I feel like basketball, because there's so many more teams, so many more conferences, so many more teams that make the tournament, I feel like they have the advanced stats, like, a little bit more airtight than football.
They really do. It's a much more analytical type of game.
Football, there's still a little bit of like...
It's tough to... You, in basketball, the sport of basketball has changed so much because of analytics that there's just so many numbers you can play with and things you can do to play that game mathematically. Football, man, it's such a game of will. It's such a game of week to week. You don't play as many games. There's not as much of a sample size to pull from. The kind of the sport in and of itself isn't exactly apples to apples. Like, you can play the same sport but differently. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be a passing team, a running team, a defensive team, a sack-driven team, you know, whatever it might be. You can win games and not win time of possession but have a whole bunch of turnovers. You can get, like, the Jaguars, for instance, that played have put themselves in position with wins, but haven't really looked good doing it, but have won the turnover battles in so many of their games by such a wide margin that they've won. And, okay, like, that's the way you want to do it. It's a tough way to live and die.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's only 17 games. And if you can do that for a short period of time, in basketball, there's so many more games that won't live out. Like, winning games one way, you're going to live and die, you know, often because – you only win one way.
Yeah, the sample, I mean, they play three times as many games in college, so the sample does help. I started off as a big football, like, it's just different, unquantifiable eye test guy, and then I became more of a stats and, like, advanced stats guy, and now I've kind of reverted back into, like, I don't know. It's really, like, you really have to watch the games to get a feel for these teams. Like,
not only that, but you got to watch every game.
Yeah, the stats lie so much.
And so are you telling me that these playoff committees, they watch every game?
Exactly.
No, they don't.
Or they know, like, just taking the Miami-Notre Dame example of, like, do they both watch, like, their Pitt game? Like, they watch the Pitt game against all the I think they both played, like, NC State. Did they watch those games? Did they watch Miami, NC State?
And you got to know the narrative. You got to know the health. Like, this is my biggest pet peeve with national media when it comes to really breaking down the Texans, for instance, because the Texans aren't always in the national spotlight. Mm-hmm. The national media can break down the Cowboys, the Giants, the Jets, the Packers, the Bears forever because they're always in their direct line of sight. the Texans are kind of on the peripheral. So they'll say things about the Texans that we've been saying for months, like a month later, trying to play catch up and trying to say what the issue is with the Texans.
Yeah. To me, the biggest example years past was about Laremy Tunsil, where they go like, where they talk about Larry Tunsil in the most glowing terms. Mm-hmm. But locally, the conversation is all about the negatives.
Because you watch every game. Yes. You watch every snap. You watch every play. You know what this team is about. You know how they're built. You know how they're supposed to have success. You know where their weakness is. Like, yes, the box score says this. Yes, they won. I understand all that. So now the national media is catching up to what is happening. Oh, man, they're starting to win games. Yeah, but like, 36 yards in the second half against the Bills. Like, there's some warts here that are being covered up that people aren't talking about.
And that 37 yards in the second half against the Bills.
36. That's a little generous.
Sorry. I test some of the measurements. I think they short them. Adds up. That was a national TV game.
Yeah.
Too. Like, it still happens in, like...
But it was the defensive performance was so overwhelming. Yeah. Was such a strong deodorant that it covered up anything. It covered up all of it. It took over the story of the game. And that's why when you talk to these guys in the locker room, in the podium, every single day, and you know, I had someone on Kicking with Kunkel ask me, how much do press conferences really matter? Is it all coach speak? It depends, first of all, who the coach is. You know, Ime Udoka is open, honest, and good every single day. Kelvin Sampson is long-winded. He kind of does that like Trump thing where he weaves in and out stories and then returns back to the given point. But you can learn so much if you actually take the time to listen to Kelvin every time. He's not a great soundbite necessarily all the time because he's long-winded. But D'Amico Ryans, if you listen to him throughout the course of the season, you can pick up on things that he says and things he doesn't say, and they become very valuable when you stack those days and you stack the time in the locker room and you parse and piece things all together. For instance, last year and the year prior, we would always ask him about what it took to turn around this program, to turn around the franchise, what they're building on, what the Texas way is, with Will Anderson saying, you know, not everyone can play in Houston. Not everyone's built for this. You know, what does that mean? And he would answer it by saying, you know, we have great leadership with Azeez Alshire, Jalen Petrie, C.J. Stroud. He would mention from time to time, and Will Anderson. He would always mention those guys as players that he thought exemplified the Houston Texans way. Not once, ever, in his 2 years with Laremy Tunsil did he ever mention Laremy Tunsil. Not once, as a captain, as your best player on the offensive side of the ball in regards to your salary, being named a captain, the tenure. He's a very good left tackle. He's not saying he's not good, but when he's talking about Laremy or talking about the Texan way and leadership and how they want to evolve as a franchise and as a program, not once did he mention Laremy Tunsil, but he did say that he wants to revamp the offensive line. He wants to change the mindset. Well, the mindset is dictated by your leader in that room. And by default, Laremy Tunsil was the leader in that room. I think Titus Howard is better this year because Laremy Tunsil is not around. Laremy Tunsil was a very cool, too cool for school guy, and I think Titus Howard bought into that a little bit. Now, to Titus Howard's credit, my God, he's gotten better because he's willing to play the guard position. He's willing to play the tackle position. He's willing to move bodies. He's gotten better because Laremy Tunsil is gone. I think the unit has gotten better. The numbers say that the unit has gotten better. And I think that's an addition by subtraction without Laremy here. So you can listen to a D'Amico Ryans talk over a period of time and figure out some things and learn some stuff.
I feel like Caserio, you don't learn much. I feel like Caserio, it's like word salad that sounds good. Like, it sounds sound, but I'm not sure. Like, he doesn't divulge anything real.
I think for 95% of the time, you're right, for sure.
Yeah.
I think he also tries to be so much that way that he actually does himself some harm at times. For instance, when he was asked about the offensive line and he said, "We're not worried about it. You shouldn't be worried about it." Well, then it became a major concern throughout the entire year. But he's like trying to like deflect negative energy and negative narratives from the offensive line, which is nice, but you can't do it that way. Or he was asked about when do you draft for need versus best available. And he says, we'll never draft for need. Well, okay, so you always want to get the best player. I like that. I respect that. But the problem is when your needs are so glaring on the offensive line and you draft the luxury position twice at wide receiver, you can't really do that. Like, you got to get, at some point, you got to get what you need. Now, I understand you don't want to overpay and overbid and outdraft somebody at a slot you may not think worthy. But at the same time, if you need it so badly, maybe it is worthy. Maybe it's worthy to go up and go get the guy or go back and get your, whatever it might be. They obviously did not address it as aggressively as they could have been because there are guys out there doing work at the rookie level that the Texans don't have and could have had.
Yeah. I think that they should draft for need this season.
At least from time to time, not everywhere.
Yeah.
I do agree that like in the
second.
Can
we get a guard?
Like, some, yeah.
Can we walk out of the draft with a guard?
An offensive lineman?
Yeah.
And player. So for instance, like, would you, there are points you draft for need, is that you're not going to draft a left tackle if Ariante Irister is your left tackle for the future, right? Like, you're not going to go out and just double draft a left tackle and be like, all right, well, we got the best player on the board, therefore.
Yeah, or like the,
like, that was the right thing to do. Like, no, not necessarily.
Yeah, like the Falcons are going to go out and draft another running back. You know, like,
they wouldn't sign a quarterback for multi-millions and then draft another quarterback.
Falcons, bad example. But in general, like, you know, like, they're not going to go out and, like, on a in a position where it's like you have the best in the league and you don't really play more than one, you're probably not going to spend high-level value doubling up on that position.
Right. So then that's a situation where Nick...
Like, you are taking need into account.
100%.
Yeah.
You don't double up for the sake of doubling up just because the best available is the best available.
Yeah, like the...
You trade back. That's the definition of you get the best available when you're on the board, but you moved back because the best available was not a position of need.
Exactly. Or a target. Like, you're targeting a guy. And so, I think that you hit the nail on the head. Like, press conferences are only as useful as the person giving the answers. And I think to a certain extent, the people asking questions. But that's a little more in the weeds.
Let's play that D'Amico sound that we had you pull about D'Amico talking about this Texans team and the buy-in, because they went through hell this season. They really did. Like, they started off 0-3. All the questions were bad. All the energy from the media was bad and was negative, but also rightfully so, because they were bad. They were negative. The offense was horrendous. The offense was dragging this Texans team down. And yet D'Amico Ryans always stayed positive. He always kept his message the same, and I commend him for that, and I thought it was the right thing to do in the moment. It became a little bit of like a, hey, don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining type of situation. I know you're full of BS right now. At some point, you got to be a little bit honest. Maybe not, but you're going to get bashed a little bit from us if you just keep hammering the same talking points, and they clearly fly in the face of what is on the field and what the film says. Like, film don't lie. And at some points, they were just really conflicting. And now it's really convenient that D'Amico is saying all the things that we said early were true and are true. Here's what he said about kind of keeping that message and keeping the boat afloat.
Yeah, for me, you know, if your message is changing every week and you guys may feel like you have to do something different, I feel like the game of football, you don't have to make something up. You don't have to do something different. All the work you put in training camp, all the rules that you taught, all those things, like, it doesn't change. Focus on exactly what we can do to put ourselves in position to win games. Focus on yourself as an individual, not staying status quo. How are you really pushing yourself to get better? How are you studying a little extra? How are you working a little extra in practice? How are you working a little extra in your recovery process? That's all that I preach to the guys, and I'll continue to preach that because I know that's what truly matters when the game is on the line.
100%. I couldn't agree more. Moving the goalposts week to week of what you want to be and who you want to be and changing your principles, changing your values, that's no way to corral a team. It's no way to deliver a message. It's no way to create identities. It's no way to win games. Like, the facts don't change of how your team and your roster would be best fit to win a game. The facts don't change of how you win football games, taking care of the ball, playing disciplined, winning the time of possession, you know, moving the rock, whatever it might be, whatever your team is catered to. There's little idiosyncrasies within each team that do things differently than another team, but the overall way to win games in the NFL or in football in general don't change. So if you change your message from week one to week four to week six to week 10, and you keep jockeying all around, the players are going to see that. They're going to feel that. They know that. And they don't know what the hell to do from week to week. It's kind of like the conversation we've had in college football playoffs. No, the teams don't know what the hell to do in order to get in the playoffs because there's no principles. There's no values. There's no rhyme or reason as to who's in and why they're in. D'Amico Ryans has maintained steady. It's like, it's in life. It's in politics. Whatever your message is, have your principles and stop moving the damn goalposts to what fit you. We see that. We notice it. We're not dumbasses. The players are the same way. And D'Amico stayed steady. He kept the ship afloat, but he also kept it moving forward strongly. Like, strong leadership is not changing. The message now is to get better. Continue to do what we've been doing. We are a defensive-led team, and we need to get better moving the ball offensively. We want to be a power downhill team. I understand you want to be that. And they've proven that they want to be that, but they're not always that. But they've found other ways to move the ball, like getting Nico Collins the ball on that jet sweep. Not a reverse, a jet sweep. They've run the ball outside the tackles in the red zone with Woody Marks. Like, they're not slamming their head as often into the brick walls they were. All right, that's going to do it for me today. Will Kunkel filling in for Del Olale here on ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. I appreciate everybody that chimed in, called in, and texted in. Another great day today. I will be back in tomorrow from 10 to noon following Lance and John, and then we'll get you out to Rich Eisen tomorrow as we are about to do now. Have a safe, pleasant, and blessed day. Peace, everybody.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.